petition, and we are asking the United Nations to please send an envoy to the United States. It's as ridiculous as it sounds, but to think that we have to petition the United Nations to come in and investigate what is happening to people of color here in the United States of America, just like they did in Guatemala when all of the assassinations were taking place in Guatemala and the people that were being attacked. We have a similar situation here in the United States that we need help. We can't get it from our own government. Maybe people in the United Nations can help and assist us.
There were many around the country who called for a general strike, bringing together the issue of labor and immigrant rights. You are a leading labor immigrant rights activist. In your final comment in these 30 seconds, do you endorse this?
Absolutely, but we know it has to take a lot of good planning to make sure it's effective. And we also want to say to people, you can go to aclu.org/knowyour-rights/immigrants-rights to help and get more information, and also to nilc.org/resources. Everybody has rights.
Dolores Huerta, we want to thank you so much for being with us. Renowned civil rights activist, co-founder of the United Farm Workers, and president of the Dolores Huerta Foundation. We spoke to her at her home in Bakersfield, California. She is 95 years old. Happy birthday.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
Right now is Cartober, and it's the best time to support KBOO by donating your vehicle today. You can get rid of that old boat, car, van, truck, jet ski, or RV and have the proceeds from the sale go to KBOO and receive a tax deduction for your support of community media. For more information, check out kboo.fm/vehicle or call 877-526-6163.
Support for KBOO comes from its members and from the Bureau of Labor and Industries Child Care for Construction, a program dedicated to helping working families in the trades in partnership with Business Oregon. More info at oregon.gov/BOLI/apprenticeship under the link Financial Assistance for Registered Apprentices.
From
good morning, and you are listening to KBOO, your community radio station, 90.7 FM in Portland, 91.9 in Hood River, 104.3 in Corvallis, and via the World Wide Web, it is kboo.fm. If you are listening live on Monday, it is approximately 8.02 a.m., and today is the 20th of October. I'm Cecil Prescott, and thank you all for joining us here on More Talk Radio on your community radio station. We are pleased to have a panel discussion this morning of people who have been involved in activities over this weekend and their various perspectives on what has been happening. And I am pleased that people are able to get up at 8 o'clock in the morning. So thank you all for being here. With us are I'll go around, Edie, who's an organizer, and I just found out that she was a corker this weekend, so.
And street medic and de-escalator.
Okay. And thank you so much for all you're doing, and we'll be looking forward to hearing more about your perspectives. Also with us is Elliot, who's a professor of history at Lewis and Clark. And thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thanks for having me.
Great. Also joining us is someone who's been active many years, who is with the Portland Grey Panthers, Lou Church. Good morning, Lou. And Lou just waved. Oh. And our engineer is making sure everyone has a microphone. And also joining us is Portland City Council member Angelita Murillo. And thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me.
So I heard that there were a lot of people out this weekend. And I think it was Edie who was speculating earlier before we began the show about throughout the nation, how many people. And why don't you speak and share?
I have been looking at Heather Cox Richardson's analysis from others on how many people showed up. We don't have accurate counts. There are all different kinds of communities, different sizes. But a minimum of 8.2 million people counted. And there's so many more. I know that when we had earlier No Kings marches in Portland, people may have said there was 50,000, 60,000 people. But people were coming and going. So at any one time, there may have been 60,000. But there are more people came earlier and later.
Wow, amazing.
I was just going to mention a person that we contacted in Washington, D.C., Michelle, phoned in, and she's waiting. If we possibly could go to Michelle, it'd be great. She could talk for 2 or 3 minutes. She's an organizer from Washington, D.C., and might talk about the march there on turnout, if you want to, Cecil.
Okay, let's hear from her, and then we can talk about what's been happening here in Oregon. Okay, good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you for joining us. How are you? How is D.C.?
Well, we're all right living under occupation, but what else is new? And just so I can put my pitch in now, you know, it really takes the votes of representatives from the real states to help us get statehood. And until then, we're basically a functional colony, although we fight for what we need. So, and I also just wanted to interject and say something. You know, people were talking about the numbers and the counts. Well, I remember when we were marching in Washington, D.C. to make Martin Luther King's birthday a federal holiday. And that's when Stevie Wonder unveiled his song, his happy birthday song. And Dick Gregory was speaking. And he said, now, this is back when the Park Service used to do the official counts before they were charged with, you know, fudging the numbers. He said, well, we already know that the Park Service is going to lie about the numbers. So when people ask you how many people were down there, you just tell them that there were gugobs of people. You saw, everywhere you look, you saw gugobs of people.
Like that.
And then let them figure out the numbers from that. He said, what we know is that as far as we could see, there were people. And we were all out there. And we did have a bunch of issues, but we had a single goal. And that is to say that this is our country, and you can't do all of this stuff to us without our consent. And okay, and now you have awakened the sleeping giant. So anyway, I just wanted to make that pitch. But I am I'm glad to be able to join you all this morning. I don't know how much I can add to the conversation, but I'm co-convener of the Grey Panthers of Metropolitan Washington, and we tried to work in a tri-state area. We work in the colony of D.C., but we also work with Grey Panthers in Maryland and Virginia. So we kind of have a multi-state focus. But I can say that there were, and I provided more moral support because I wasn't physically able to get out there and march and stay. But I mean, I was working to try to support people while I was out there, while I was here. You know, marshaling phones and information and sharing.
Yes.
and encouraging people to get out there.
Excellent.
I know that there were, I mean, at least the last official count I saw, a semi-official count, was around 200,000, but I'm certain that there were more than that. And the thing for people to understand is that in Washington, D.C., there is a demonstration literally every day. So we live with demonstrations all the time.
Sure.
And generally, it's people coming into town, and they used to say, you know, we're marching on D.C. until we sort of challenge them that, you know, there actually is a community here.
So, Michelle,
what
this
I
is...
What I am happy to say is that there were so many people out there, and people had extremely creative signs. It was both serious and joyful. I mean, I've talked to other people about some of their reactions to it, including people who fell and had to get aid, and people who said, well, that's the first time I ever saw Bernie Sanders, and that's somebody who grew up here. So,
Michelle, I was going to interject, if it's okay with Cecil. We have a panel of people, and because you called in first, which I know I asked you to do, from D.C., I thought that would be really important. So none of us have been able to talk yet, which is okay. But if there's a specific issue going forward in D.C. you're organizing on, and you want to mention that for two or three sentences, if that's okay, and then we should try to have the panel in the studio talk. Thanks for calling in, though. It's great. I wasn't sure you were going to call. So
okay.
Go ahead and mention an issue if you want.
I'll try to call early.
You're fine.
But anyway, yeah, one of the main things that we really want to focus on is health care. What we want to do is we have identified three areas that we think that we can elevate so that, and working with the new president of the National Medical Association in particular, but really work to identify efforts and projects where we can better control our own health care. Because until we get universal health care, we can see with the attack that the federal government is making on all of us, all the people. And, you know, they've targeted D.C. because we are a colony. But the reality is that they're doing everything they can to take what we need away while they move more of the money over to the profiteers and the corporations. But we're still here. We're still going to be functioning, and we're still working. And it's workers who have to have what they need to make things happen. So we're going to be working in three areas of health care, trying to replicate the Panthers' door-knocking campaigns and set up our own local community health entities where we can advise and guide people, working with medical students and medical and nursing students. So that's a large part of what we're looking at right now.
Great. Thank you so much, and we appreciate the work you're doing, and I appreciate just making sure that people are safe and that people are healthy, and for the communities coming together and reminding us that there are googogs of people doing this work. So thank you so much, and D.C. shall be free someday. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you for your work.
All right. Thank you.
Have a great day. And you're listening to More Talk Radio here in your community radio station, KBOO-FM. I'm Cecil Prescott, and we just heard from an organizer from the Washington, D.C. We have a panel here of people here to talk about what's been happening locally. They are Elliot, the professor of history at Lewis and Clark, elected official Angelita Murillo of Portland City Council, and Edie, who is a street medic and an organizer. Let's hear from our panel here. And everyone say, no, not me first, but yeah, I want to hear from our elected official. So much is going on around here right now, and I'm sure you're inundated by lots of things. What is some of your perspective about this weekend, and where do you see city council moving? I know the city council did this incredible
resolution
late last week. Do you see the action of the crowds in coordination with that? Give us your perspective. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much for that question. I mean, I was lucky enough to be down there with all of our constituents this weekend, and it was really a beautiful sight to behold. I think that there are, you know, valid criticisms about protests that are sort of more like parades and questions about whether or not people are making true concrete demands. But I would say that what I saw was a lot of people coming collectively together, exercising the muscle of being in unison at one time very quickly. And everything that we've learned from scholars that talk about how you defeat fascism, who have studied this their entire lives, they talk about the fact that you need those folks in the mushy middle who are going to be willing to support anti-fascist organizers and people who are there on the front lines, right? So I think there's just a huge shift, right? You're seeing people talk about ICE like they're the new Gestapo because they are, and people mm-hmm. are naming that. You're seeing people say that they want an end to the genocide in Palestine. You're just seeing a huge shift in the rhetoric and the things that people are willing to do to show up to liberate themselves and other people across the world. And I think that's something just immeasurably wonderful. Mm-hmm. And I think that the entire country, and especially Portland, is ready to meet this political moment. And I think that they're expecting their elected officials to do the same. People are not appreciating milquetoast responses to our neighbors getting kidnapped in the streets. They want action. And last week, City Council did pass a resolution sort of outlining the plans that we have to address how the federal government is intervening locally and to codify our sanctuary status to just give it a stronger protection in courts. But I'm also going to be bringing a few different policies that I hope will address some of the incursions from the federal government in the coming weeks. And we absolutely need an inside-outside game, right? You need elected officials on the inside who are willing to push transformative policies, and you need people on the outside who are going to, you know, push us to be as progressive as we can be and to defend our neighbors with everything they have. So I think that it's going to be everyone playing their part and doing Migra Watch and doing medical aid and doing everything to take care of one another.
Thank you so much. You're listening to More Talk Radio and your community radio station, KBOO. I'm Cecil Prescott, and we're having a discussion about the actions throughout the nations, and particularly in Oregon this past weekend. We have one caller online. Let's hear what they have to say, and then we'll go back to, I want to talk to Professor of History. Organizer Toro, good morning.
Hi, good morning. Thank you so much for taking my call. I just wanted to pipe in a little bit because I've been one of the main organizers of Portland 5051 and now No Kings Portland since February. And I want to, I was just listening to Councillor Murillo speak, and I would love to just add on to that, that yes, we need parades in the street. We need the community. We need that mushy middle ground. And also our goal in Portland, No Kings, is to activate those people to do more. So everything we're pushing people to do is, what can you do between protests? How do you get involved? How do you get into politics locally? Take over your school boards, et cetera, et cetera. How do we push on our government to do what we want? And because of these giant protests we have had, we have begun to be invited into the mayor's office and other local officials to hear our voices, because they understand that we have a connection with the people that they unfortunately do not, and that mm-hmm. they need to have. Mm-hmm. So there is power in protest and power in visibility, because it opens doors to real change, and it allows us to have interactions with people who are newly activated and give them direction for what to do. And then, yeah, we need to celebrate in the street and dress up as frogs and mushrooms as well.
Excellent, excellent. As you organize, and you've been organizing, you said, for most of this year, were there any particular challenges that you confronted that you did not expect? And how have people been able to pivot when they meet these challenges in terms of organizing?
Oh, that is an excellent and large question. I could think of dozens of examples. So we started this not really knowing. It was a group, it was five of us that started and said, we just need to do something. We have to do something. No one was yet forming a group in Portland in February. So as we've gone along, you know, our first thoughts were, okay, we're going against executive overreach. We want to protect the Constitution, but as we've gone on, we have to think about, what does that truly mean and how do we put that into practice? And so it has honestly been pivot after pivot after pivot after pivot. And so there's no way to say this one thing. It's more of my team is amazing. That event put on this weekend, the No Kings group of core organizers is only 2 to 3 dozen strong. And we were able to put that together in 5 to 6 weeks. And so it is just about the amazing flexibility and the dedication of people to say, hey, you know what? The climate is changing politically all the time, so we have to too. And having that understanding has been what's been able to let us succeed.
Excellent, excellent. And as you just said, and the city council person before you are saying that we need multiple strategies, inside, outside. There are multiple things that varied people can do and engage, and it's more than just a march, correct?
Yes, and diversity of tactics is something that can only work if it's not coming all from the same spot, right? We need people at the front lines putting their bodies on the line. We need people mobilizing the masses, getting people who have never been involved in politics, always said, hey, I'm not political. They are waking up, and so we are looking to be that place where they can land and funnel them into where else they want to go. We need people working with malicious compliance. We need boycotts. We need strikes. We need people on the inside trying to create change. We need it all because we do not have the money and the power that this administration has at this moment, so we need to be taking it back from all tactics.
Okay, and you know, George Soros only has so much, so we all have
fair.
To. Hey, thank you so much for your work. I want to go share a little bit with our professor of history to have them share something about where we are in this moment in time. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, so I was actually at a conference in Albuquerque, New Mexico on Saturday, so I was able to visit the No Kings March. And what was striking is that there and in more than 2,000 places across the country, and in Portland, you know, it wasn't just one march, there were multiple marches in the city, is the sort of expansiveness of these marches, the showing that there is widespread opposition to this regime. And if we look back at history, this isn't the first moment we've encountered authoritarianism. Some people call it fascism in the United States. There was the Red Scare in the 19-teens, and then in the 1950s, that was also following a similar playbook of repression against people for their ideological viewpoints, particularly targeting people with leftist ideologies. And what we saw then and what we see now is a lot of our so-called liberal institutions like universities, law firms, preemptively obeying and making agreements with an authoritarian government. So we've had professors of history fired in Texas State University. Other professors like the Mark Bray at who's a history professor at Rutgers, who was facing death threats, had to escape with his family to Spain. So we're really seeing this across the board. And unfortunately, we're also seeing our neighbors, our immigrant neighbors, being picked up, kidnapped in the street in Chicago, Black Hawk helicopters landing on an apartment complex, breaking down doors, separating people by race, seizing American citizens as well. So the fascist creep, which might have started out with immigrants, is quickly expanding to lots of people in our society, including citizens. And I think the the lessons from history tells us that it is the civic institutions and all of us who really need to lay our bodies down in front of this machine. And they cannot accomplish this without our complicity and compliance. So one of the great things about the sanctuary law in Oregon and the city council's own reaffirmation of that is that Portland and Oregon has said, we will not be complicit with the federal role of immigration enforcement. So basically taking us out of that role. And I think that that applies to lots of different people. There are servers in restaurants who are refusing to serve ICE people who come in. There are hotels who are refusing to house them. So I think there's a role for everyone to basically obstruct and stop what is really a lawless fascist creep in the United States.
Thank you so much. Eric is a professor of history of Lewis and Clark, and reminding us of the historical overview and how we are part of a stream of people who have fought authoritarianism. You're listening to More Talk Radio here on your community radio station, KBOO-FM. I am Cecil Prescott. Our numbers here are 503-231-8187 if you would like to give a call. And we will continue our conversation with our panelists.
I was hoping, sorry, Cecil, that perhaps Annalita and Edie could also speak as well, if that's feasible at the moment. Your choice.
And yeah, I want to go back to what the professor was saying in terms of institutions and pushbacks. I think a lot of us were concerned about when the administration came into power this time, how easy institutions that we thought were institutions, you know, universities, law firms, the press, all seemed to cave into. Which brings me back to Portland City Council, who has an ability, you know, certainly got the federal's eye. But there's been something happening with the Portland City Council in terms of pushback, in terms of resisting. What is it? And I know it's a new city council, and maybe because you all are, well I guess 11 of you are all new members, you just had the courage to say, okay, let's do what we can do. What do you think gives the courage of counselors to push back? And where do you see the city council heading in the future?
I think that I would love to say that I'm super courageous and uniquely courageous for this moment, but I think it has more to do with the fact that I'm a Paraguayan immigrant. And so I'm the only immigrant on city council, but some of my other colleagues have family members who are immigrants. Many of us are Jewish, queer, marginalized in some way. And so I think that we all understand that our liberation is tied together. And if this administration comes for one group, they're coming for us next. And so we feel deeply connected to the struggle of our constituents and what they're going through. Mm-hmm. And that means that this isn't a top-down approach. This is us saving ourselves and saving our entire community, right? So I don't think that anyone, I think in every moment in history when terrible things happen, people always wish that they were a little bit braver, a little bit smarter, or had some sort of secret talent to get through it. But really, it's just ordinary people coming together and just drawing a line in that sand. And I think, you know, it's a struggle in terms of, it's very difficult for your city council to regulate the federal government. People are like, well, you know, I don't have a secret militia in my back pocket to address the military coming in or something like that. But I think that your city councilors, what I expect of myself and of my colleagues is that we're going to be creative in the solutions that we bring forward. So my office, for example, we're bringing two policies to try to address detention centers opening up in our city and how ICE can use ICE and any agency can use our data to track immigrants and protesters. So for one policy I'm bringing forward in the next few weeks is a detention facility fee. So if you are a landlord that wants to profit by contracting with a detention center, for example, like ICE, but it doesn't just have to be limited to ICE, you incur a fee because our city ends up paying for tear gas mitigation and cleanup. We end up paying for police overtime. We end up paying for road closures, all of those things. And so if you are going to open up a detention facility, you should be paying for that part of that, the impacts on our community. And the second policy I'm bringing forward, I'm very invested in data privacy. I think that data privacy is going to be the 21st century frontier of fighting fascism, as we have ICE tracking people's license plates, facial recognition technology, using things to create patterns of life for activists that are have different opinions than this administration wants them to have. And so we're bringing those policies forward as well. And this is, you know, these are the first, not the last, but I hope that my colleagues are going to be ready to pass some of those harder, more controversial policies that impact landlords who want to profit off of detention, that impact our data privacy, because it's all good and well to pass a resolution that feels nice and says we care about immigrants, and then we'll push come to shove later. Will they vote for these things? So yeah. I'm looking forward to getting community in to testify on that and push us along.
Excellent. You're listening to More Talk Radio on your community radio station. I'm Cecil Prescott, and we'll go to a caller who wants to respond. Sally from Arizona. Good morning.
Good morning. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, we can.
Oh, good. It's a little bit of an echo on my end. Okay, yeah. It may seem odd to people I'm calling from here. I'm out in a pretty rural area, not in the literal countryside, but in a very small town in Winslow, Arizona. I'm also having mobility challenges myself. I broke my ankle last year, so I've kind of been stuck at home. And you know, I would like to see more than protests in large groups, partly because I'm well aware of the fact that many people like me are out here and have no way to go to the larger Flagstaff. Anybody can go from here, which is only a few people I even know about from the Democratic groups, are going to Flagstaff. So there's really nothing happening. This is small enough. I understand from the media that there were some protests in smaller places, but they're not covered. Mm-hmm. The large media is covered, and I wanted to address that in Oregon, because Oregon is more than just Portland.
Right.
And a lot of the people in the rural areas tend to be, quote-unquote, on the other side. But we need those people, too. And the people who are out there organizing, trying to organize in those communities, don't have access to the same kind of even ability to protest that people in urban areas do. And I think people should be aware of that, that we shouldn't,
yes,
we should not abandon the other side of the mountain, literally the other side of politics, and decide that, you know, we're divided and never the twain shall meet, because I don't think in this time historically that's true.
Yeah,
because they're affected by all of these cuts and stuff too, and they don't have the resources. From what I understand, West Virginia, they're losing 3 of their rural hospitals.
Yes. Hey,
we need to be aware of that, but those people who are losing that stuff aren't, you know, aren't in an urban area.
Yes.
It's very well, all very well, but the amount of people out for No Kings in Phoenix, state capital, has tripled.
Hey.
And that's all very well and good, but are those people coming in?
Sally, let me respond, Sally. I think you raised a very good point in terms of allowing us to remember it's more than an urban movement, and indeed part of what's happened this weekend in Oregon and throughout the nations, where people gather in urban, rural, suburban and parts. And it has, from my perspective, it's been really exciting to see people in various communities. Lou, did you have something to say?
Sure, I was just going to say, thanks a lot for calling in, Sally. I wasn't sure if you were going to make it today. I should mention that Sally's worked a lot with Edie and I and others with Portland Grey Panthers. And Arizona is a state we've just been asked to expand into. So thanks for calling, Sally. I appreciate that. Arizona is a really important state. It's a purple state. But what I think Angelita mentioned a while back, and Sally touched on this too, of organizing the people who don't necessarily identify with the alleged importance of creating like a militant third party or something. There's basically two choices at the moment: Trump and his goons out versus people in. And one of the things that I think Toro might have mentioned was, and I think Angelita as well, inside and outside in terms of strategy. So I should mention parenthetically, and hopefully Edie and Elliot will have more slots than Angelita as well, is for Panthers, we brought Keith Wilson, who's the mayor, and Alana Pertle-Guinney, who's city council president, to the station a couple months ago, but the station was locked here, KBOO. Keith has talked to us 6 times, both in before and after the election with Panthers at Portland State. Alana has done that as well. Angelita has been our, I guess we'd say, favorite or most activist member of the 12 who are in now on council. I should also mention I helped set up today for the program because we have a speaker who's coming who's from the inside Wednesday night at Portland State. His name's Cornell Wesley. He just moved here from Montgomery, Alabama. He's executive director, a black man who's the new director of Prosper Portland. There's been some controversy from council, particularly Jamie Dunphy and Mitch Green, about what's the proper role of Prosper Portland. So I just wanted to mention that's 6 p.m. Wednesday, PSU Poblano Mexican Grill Cafe, October 22nd, in 2 days. So that's something that people are welcome to come to. We've also taken tenants to city council, and we've heard from, I think, over 80 candidates and office holders. So we've been doing both boycotts in particular. I think Toro might have mentioned boycotts. And the last thing I wanted to add was there's a boycott. We even did some endorsement forms for the Walmart boycott to end gun violence, which has been endorsed by Keith Wilson, endorsed by Annalita, endorsed by Maxine Dexter, and probably 25 groups and people in the Northwest. And that is partly because of they caved to Trump on DEI, and Walmart's a really good target something to do in between the mass protests. And there are other corporate targets as well. So maybe, depending, Cecil, Annalita, and Edie may have other comments as well.
Thank you.
No, sorry.
Thank you, Lou. I think it's so important, as you suggested, and others, next steps, actions that people can do. And what I've heard today are many things that people can do inside and outside. Edie.
I wanted to let people know that when we get together in large groups with people in a fun, safe, family-inviting, all abilities accessible gatherings, we counter fear. When we are afraid, we freeze, we dissociate, we run away, we fight, we do dumb things, we can't think clearly. And part of what the No Kings is trying to do and what Extinction Rebellion is trying to do is to have the joy, the love, the commitment for the world we want to have, how to be the change we want. And so we want to provide a welcoming space, a transition space for folks who have never gone to a protest or don't want to go to downtown Portland from how they believe it is, and to dress up, to have fun, to celebrate that joy is liberation. And this Saturday, or this Friday, October 24th at 6:30 p.m., Extinction Rebellion PDX will have a disco dance party. Nonviolent, no property destruction, try to keep each other safe, but playful and fun. Replace the joy over fear and immobilization. And then we develop trust, we develop courage, we develop conversations, we develop an ability to handle something that's new and difficult and realize, hey, we have more courage and resilience, we're more capable, and then we're more able to think of new solutions.
Yes.
That's what KBOO did over a 30-year analysis by the FBI and other federal agencies when they're looking at how can different cities, at that time Portland was a lot smaller, that size and larger across the United States, deal with martial law. They didn't want us to resist it. And the one town, the one city across the entire nation that they thought would be the most resilient, the most able to take care of its people was Portland, and they said that's because of KBOO. And that's what we're trying to do with KBOO. We're trying to do with No Kings. We're trying to do with Extinction Rebellion. We're trying to do with Resist U.S.-Led Wars, all these different groups. Please get your training from the ACLU. Get your training with PRC about how to have neighborhood watch to come immediately to protect folks, warn folks, get your whistles out. If you think that people are going to come and abduct them, not necessarily just under the cover of law, as federal mercenaries of war invading us, but also there's just all these other common criminals who dress up in their, you know, Spirit Halloween or whatever thrift shop army costumes so they can abduct people and do horrible things. So we have to make sure that we unite and all across the spectrum. It could be people at home who are getting the money, who are making little chemical wipes to protect yourself from or clean up the tear gas or pepper spray. It could be people who are making snacks, people who are getting water, who are getting the folding wagons to provide folks. It could be folks that are getting a flatbed for people with disabilities that has a lift for their wheelchairs to be at the front to go slowly. There's any number of ways in which we can talk with our local neighborhoods, our local churches, our local unions, and create that community that we are the change we want.
Excellent. Edie, reminding us that as we build community, we create the world we want to be. And it is so important to recognize that there's a role for all of us. We all are able to do only what you can do. So be aware of who you are and what you are called to do and be in this moment. Let's go to a caller who's been waiting for some time. Tangent.
Oh, hi. Good morning. I feel called to call KBOO.
Okay.
Hey, I wasn't at the march, but we went to the Saturday market, so I thought I'd share my impressions about it. One, I didn't notice a march. We were there about 2 o'clock. But what I noticed is a lot of people in very interesting states of dress and of all ages just walking around joining. Now, there was a scene as we left. I noticed there was a larger gathering scene, but I didn't hear any large megaphones And I was really happy about that. I've been talking about a long time, maybe. In other words, if we don't have a big march, then there's nothing for another force to try to oppose. If people are just—it just looked like a really good Saturday down in Portland, sunny Saturday. I wanted to—I heard a term started to float around, and I hope I can nip this in the bud. People in the streets are not the mushy middle.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know who puts this out. I'm guessing the New York Times, but no, I don't want that to grow any speed. A couple quick comments just on this thing with Venezuela. It seems that we're addicted to the war on drugs. I hadn't heard that old term, you know, for about 20 years. And now I guess it's on steroids.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
I could make a couple comments if you want about Venezuela and the mushy middle, or we can go to the next caller.
Let's go to the next caller, and then you can comment. Great. Tuwasi, good morning.
Good morning. As always, thanks KBOO. Thanks to everybody who supports KBOO, because you guys are doing important work. I just wanted to contrast what the far right has been doing. Because while I was raised a pacifist, I never fought anybody. But I want to bring attention to the fact that we had Garrick Fernbaugh, who was a former Navy SEAL, come to Portland, manufacture IEDs, and throw them at us. He was never charged. You know, it took how long for Tiny Tuzi to get charged, and he came to Portland for years on end. You know, mm-hmm. We have Chris Knipe, who was only arrested after journalists outed the Portland police for dragging their feet on a murder because it was of one of their political opponents. And then we have Ben Smith, who did a mass shooting at a peaceful protest. So when we look at what the far right are doing in Portland, and we contrast that to what happened on Saturday, it's just important to recognize that you can be as peaceful as you want, but the other side is already on the more extreme end of their conflict.
Right.
And, you know, even while we have so-called bulwarks of law and order to protect our society, they still are actively engaged in partisan harm against yes. our city.
Yes.
So, you know, it's important to contrast who you're standing against with your actions and see if it's proportionate, because what they're doing is very extreme. And there were multiple people arrested on Saturday who came to the marches with firearms from the far right. So, you know, while you and I may be pacifists, the people who we're standing against are very comfortable using deadly force against us purely for our free speech.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Tuasi. And reminding us that in the pursuit of transformation of our society, the methods we use, although, as you suggested, may be peaceful, that those who are opposed to this are not so committed to peaceful solutions. And so I think that part of the training, and maybe Edie can talk more about it, is in terms of how do we respond either individually or in community when we are met with violence? Because oftentimes peaceful resistance is met with violence. Thank you so much, and I'll let Edie share some thoughts.
Thank you. There's been some research by different folks over several decades showing what is effective at making social change. It's not violence. You need to have the majority of the people and be willing to go a certain direction, and it's not through fear and terror. It only takes about 3.5% of the population to really switch things. Using nonviolent, inclusive attitudes and behaviors. And it's through, if we use violence, then we just give an excuse, we take the bait, so they can justify more violence against us. I think the United States military has more to use against us than anything we could do on a military point of view, but it's totally useless when we withhold our cooperation and complicity, when we refuse to be scared. They're dependent upon fear, and we don't have to be afraid. They're dependent upon centralized control. I mean, just cutting off the electricity. Mm-hmm. There's just things that we can do to prevent them from doing the harm. We can warn each other with our little whistles and calling folks, having our phone trees. So when it's an interpersonal thing, I think, first of all, we have to center ourselves with our inner peace and calm. And then we become contagious calm. We are spreading a clarity that we are here out of love, truth, and principle. And we're going to act in a way that's consistent with what we want from the world, and we use those activities. If you look at the No Kings, if you look at Extinction Rebellion, if you look at Resist US-Led War, these different groups, they are, Gabriela, you know, Portland Committee for Human Rights in the Philippines. These groups unite locally and globally, interpersonally, and their meetings show that there's not a hierarchy, there's respect, there's caring. So if we start with caring centered on our values and that inner calm, all the different ways you can calm your body, calm your thoughts, get rested, have your water, have your food, have your plans afterwards, be prepared for what to bring, why you're there, always remembering, this is my purpose. And then, if you have an attitude that these other people are a gift in our life to grow us, to help us understand ourselves, they're like carrying around signboards. One side is a movie projection screen that we can see, oh, that's the story I'm putting on the world. I can change my story. Oh, that's a mirror. Oh, that's how I am. So we get to be self-aware. That gives us knowledge. It gives us agency. It gives us hope. It gives us self-trust and self-respect. And then we see them as our conflict partners. They're helping us grow to make a better world instead of the enemy. We had Jerome, who had been a neo-Nazi recruiter in the prisons and bragging about all the people who had brutally killed and everything. And then his little nephew had a black father, a white mother, looked up at him and said, "Are you going to kill me?" And this very tough, mean neo-Nazi said, "No." He was moved with compassion. Other folks using violence to provoke his violence and defensiveness and to close his mind and close his heart didn't work. But the vulnerability, the innocence, the nonviolence, the compassion, showing our commonality, that worked. And so you've got the Rural Organizing Project in Oregon that is helping folks in every single community that I know of. In Oregon, I grew up on the other side of the Cascades in smaller communities, grew up Republican. They all had folks doing resistance. And that takes a lot more courage because they don't have the big groups. They've got the sheriff's department against them. They've got the only store in town against them. So there is great courage. We start with love. We lead with love that gives us the power. And then we're calm. We can gray rock. When someone's coming at us, we don't need to fight. We don't have to argue. At Southwest 3rd, just a little bit north of Harvey Milk, when the No Kings rally was being led with a banner and a big fire truck full of billboards, another group, far right, was trying to take over and scare folks and distract folks. But instead, the de-escalators created distance and calm and let the nine counter-protesters, or whatever that 9 or 11, what it was, kind of go off and kind of be silly. And we were not going to engage. We were going to keep our joy. We're not going to give them any video or photo or audio that they can use to create the "we are enemies." Instead, we stay with, "We're in this together. We're here to help you, Republican, rural, Oregonian, get your health care, get your housing security, have your food security, have rights with the banks, etc." We're united, and that's how we stop being the enemy's back. Mm-hmm. And then we use the Clara method, calm and centered, listen to understand what are their underlying universal needs, agree with their needs and empathize with what they're trying to do. So they want safety, they want justice, or they want hope. And then respond with respect to that. And then maybe add additional perspective. If we are starting with Clara and calm, we get where we want to go. And it helps them repent, get free.
Thank you so much for showing us the way. Let's hear from our council member. What are your thoughts?
I really appreciate, I think, the long-term groundwork that is done by certain activists to de-radicalize white supremacists and neo-Nazis in our community. And I do want to acknowledge that the last person that called in, the urgency that they're feeling about white supremacist physical attacks on our community. I think about, you know, the Normandale shooting, the fact that if someone hadn't intervened in that moment, it would have become a mass shooting. We lost community members that day. And while that work of conversion, I think, is really lovely and beautiful, I also am seeing us rapidly escalate into, or I guess descend into, fascism in this country. So my priority is actually less about the redemption of some of these people and more on whatever it's going to take to stop them from harming innocent people who don't deserve this in the first place. Because I think that work takes decades, and I don't think that we have that time. I think we actually have months to stop this. And maybe that's quite cynical. But I think that we have to do everything we can. You know, I'm trying to do everything I can within the city council bureaucratic structure legally. I think that there are lots of people protesting on the ground. And I do think that we are walking this tightrope of the president is itching to use the Insurrection Act to justify sending the military in. And so we can't give him the optics that he wants. And at the same time, people's feelings are completely justified. They are watching their neighbors get kidnapped. They are being sent to modern-day concentration camps. And I, as a person in a position of power, I guess never want to victim blame the community members that are putting their bodies on the front lines to try to protect my community, right? So I think that this moment is requiring of us a level of discipline that we've never had to have before. And I have seen protesters who I think historically were much more rowdy than they are now, just have that discipline and understand the moment and what the president is trying to get out of us. I've actually described it a little bit as like you are a person standing in a salt circle that's protecting you, and a demon is trying to goad you out of like stepping out of the salt circle so it can attack you. That's kind of what it's like with the federal administration right now. So I guess I just want to hold that tension and say that we're walking a very fine line, and that I really respect how people have conducted themselves in the past few months. I think it just shows a really strong amount of discipline from Portlanders and a willingness to shift strategy in whatever ways will actually protect the people that we're trying to serve.
Excellent. Thank you. Thank you. And maybe some thoughts from our historian. Where are we in this moment, and how does this measure up to what's going on before?
Yeah, so I really appreciate this conversation, what Edie said, what Angelita is talking about. And if we think historically about movements against fascism, authoritarianism, we could think about slavery in the United States. The people who rose up against slavery, the enslaved people who led that rebellion and simply walked off of the plantations and picked up arms to defeat this evil system required armed resistance. We think about the Haitian Rebellion in 1791, the first black rebellion in the Americas. That required violence against the French colonial overlords. So I don't want to be not recognize that in history there have been moments when armed resistance was necessary. I do think at this particular moment in the United States, given the kind of weapons that ICE has, the U.S. military has, the right wing has, the fact that this entire country is armed to the gills, that it is a very dangerous move to think about armed conflict at this particular moment. And I do not advocate it. I don't think it's a wise tactic. But I think what we're trying to do by millions of people getting out on the streets peacefully, by using humor, which I think, you know, the green frogs, the inflatables, the naked bike ride, could do a lot more to show the ridiculousness of Trump's rhetoric of war-ravaged Portland. You just see that image and you know that they are lying about what's going on in Portland. So I think humor could be really effective. And what we're trying to do with all of this is to precisely avoid a civil war, avoid an armed conflict that's going to result in lots of people dead on both sides. And so we need to, at this moment, as Angelita says, we don't have the luxury of waiting decades. We need to obstruct this movement now so that we could take back our rights, take back our constitution. And, you know, Venezuela was mentioned in one of the caller comments. That is a completely illegal action internationally. There is no evidence that they provided that these are actually drug smugglers. And some of them are, in fact, fishermen, we know, from Colombia. And even if they were drug smugglers, there is no law that allows the United States to, without a trial, without seizing these people, proving anything, to just blow them out of the water. And what is going on in the military buildup in the Caribbean is extremely dangerous. There are clear and present dangers of the U.S. military getting involved in a war to overthrow the government in Venezuela. And I have lots of critiques about the Maduro government, who I do believe stole the election. Nonetheless, I don't believe that authorizes the United States to militarily intervene or kill innocent people, whether they're smuggling drugs or not, just blow them out of the water without a trial.
Well, Well, and from the legal perspective, too, my theory is that the Trump administration is trying to goad us, goad another country into a war, because if we're in war, he gets wartime powers, and that just expands his executive authority and his ability to send the military into different cities and just circumvent the courts. So I think that that's what the president is trying to do, and it's really, that's part of why international politics is so important. We have to be in solidarity with one another, not just locally, but also globally.
Excellent. Hey, we are coming towards the end of our hour, and I so appreciate each one of you for taking the time to come this morning and for sharing your perspective. I'm encouraged and empowered by the fact that each one of us, each one of our communities, we are called to do something. And as I mentioned earlier, we are the only ones who can do it. You are the only one who can do it. And each person has a role. So whether it's sitting on city council, whether it's teaching in the university, whether it is organizing communities, whether it's being a street medic, we each have a role to play. And so thank you, Edie, for what you are doing. Thank you, Professor, for sharing your time with us. Thank you, Lou, for being everywhere all the time. And thank you, Councilwoman Angelita, for being there for us in the halls of power. You've been listening to More Talk Radio on your community radio station. I'm Cecil Prescott. Thank you all for listening, and I will speak with you next time.
You're listening to KBOO Portland at 90.7 FM.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.